Hello, everyone. Welcome to I would say a special edition of the Big Show. Yes, we're back. We're here. We're talking, and I am now the interim host because Jeff is not in today. He had to take care of some family business. Ooh, that sounds ominous. He had to take care of some family business.
Family business.
Isn't he gashing people all around Colorado as we speak?
Yeah, breaking some legs and stuff
Yeah.
like that. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
With me, I have the usual bunch, spanning the globe, really. Oh, kind of, almost. At least we have. Let's start from the western side of the globe, and let's start with Tom. How are you doing? How's California?
I'm doing great. Life is good. My wife is preparing to get in a car and she's doing a road trip.
Oh.
And so you'll see her moving back and forth behind us as she's moving stuff to the car.
Tell her to not crawl on the floor. We don't mind. Honestly, we're all fine.
Spider Woman.
And yesterday I had the great pleasure to have a root canal.
Wow, that
Oh,
was
that's
a big
not, no, there's no pleasure
gift.
there.
That
There's no
was
pleasure
so
there,
much
my friend.
fun.
So
It
much
took
fun. Five
two
stars,
and a
would.
half hours.
Five
Two
stars,
and a
would do
half
it again,
hours.
right?
Oh man, yeah. I should leave a review like that on the dentist website. Best time of my life. I highly recommend it. Bring your own food though.
They gave you the good drugs then, if it was that good.
Drugs? They give you drugs? Actually.
Lidocaine. I learned that it's lidocaine. I asked him, how much Novocaine are you going to give him? And he laughed and said, we haven't used Novocaine in 35 years. It's all lidocaine. I said, okay. Worked. Didn't feel a thing.
Yeah, that's the most important thing.
Is my phone?
Yeah. Let's go a little bit further east and go to the home of this very network. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I've had a busy week. I've been running a train the trainer class for a whole group of guys learning our
Nice.
certification program.
Train the
So I have
train?
10 brand train the trainer. Yeah, I
Oh,
have
the
10
trainer. I was
brand
like,
the
train the
train the trainer.
train.
Yeah. So I have 10 brand new VMCT VM certified trainers I authorized
Nice.
this week. So that was really good fun. I had a lot of fun doing the classes. It's a different dynamic when you've got trainers there and you're
Yeah.
making that. It's the one where you're going back very much more going back and forth. So it's been fun to do, and I'm now glad it's Friday. Now glad it's nearly Friday. That's about that's the
Oh,
bonus.
it's
Tomorrow's
true.
Friday.
It's
And
nearly
so yeah.
Friday, it's nearly Christmas.
Yeah. I've got
Thanksgiving is
all of those things.
over, all of that.
Yeah, so I'm glad. And my experiment this evening, as I was mentioning before, we were talking about Linux last week. I've got an old MacBook Air here that's God knows how many generations old. I installed Linux Mint on it. I'm
The
now
fact that you can
successfully
install
broadcast.
Lint means it must be quite old because it doesn't have an M chip, it's just all Intel, I guess.
Doesn't have an M chip in it. It's
Yeah.
an Intel CPU. I've got it here running happily away. It's got four cores, all four cores, and 8 gig of RAM, and it's running Zoom very happily. I've got Slack up, and I've got our chat and the Firefox browser running. I'm not sure how much more I can load it up, but it's currently happy. I'm impressed. It was always the dare, could I do it? So giving it a
I mean,
go. If I
for that
disappear,
stuff. Yeah, but she
yeah.
disappeared. No, I doubt it. Like, I mean, I've used Linux as my main desktop for years, and like, I mean, back in the day, even when it was not so good, like, I mean, that was like early 2000s, I think.
Yeah, I did some stuff
It's
like
like, but no, I mean, for this kind of stuff, like, you don't need anything special. I mean, you just mentioned the three things you need, right? A web browser, Zoom, and Slack for our Slack room.
yeah,
So
got them
perfect
all
for
running
that.
happily. It's
Yeah.
doing in there everything I need it to currently.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of Thanksgiving, how did you guys spend your Thanksgiving? If you did, I mean, I know, Ian, I don't know if you did.
I worked because
You
it was just another
worked.
day for me.
Yeah, same for me, but
Eating
like, eating
thousands of calories.
thousands, tens of thousands, probably.
That seems like a
But
reasonable way
you
to put
have a
it
chef
up.
in your family, so.
I do. My brother and sister-in-law hosted this year. There's about
Okay.
20, about 20 people there. It was
Nice.
great. Big
Good
fun.
size. Not too big, not too small. Can
Right,
do a
just
lot of
right.
cool things just right. Yeah.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, and you probably had some really cool, like, things to eat.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of a group effort. People brought different stuff. That's always fun.
Yeah, that's
People
always the
bring stuff.
best.
Oh yeah, that's nice. That is a nice thing to do.
Yeah, I love doing that. Yeah, I did go to, I ended up going to the Hard Rock Cafe here in Vienna, because I was like, as always, I was like, I came back Wednesday evening. And last year I had promised myself, like, oh, for next year, either you're gonna invite some friends over or you're gonna go out somewhere. There's places around here you can, like, but you have to book them before. Well, of course, I had done none of that.
Course.
So I was like, okay, what do I do? And fortunately, the Hard Rock Cafe, they have like Thanksgiving dinner for pickup. Like, you can just go there, pick it
Wow.
up, take it home, and it was really good, actually. Surprised, I did
Wow.
not expect that.
People
So,
voluntarily eat turkey. I don't
yeah, I
understand
love
that.
turkey. No, it was
Yeah,
really
me
good.
too.
There's like, and they had a really good pumpkin pie with like caramel sauce, and like it was actually
Wow.
pretty good, I have to say. I was surprised, and it was not that expensive. So, for restaurants in Vienna, so.
So what audience do they cater to? What would drive them to have a Thanksgiving special? Is it expats or is it Austrians?
No, it's probably mostly expats, mostly Americans. I mean, there's tons of Americans, also tourists right now, tons of tourists that are in Vienna. So that's why there's a lot of events. Like, there's the Democrats Abroad, for example, do something. I cannot join that because I'm not an American citizen, but like I know they organize something. They have, like, there's, I think, two other, there's a hotel, I think the Marriott Hotel has a special. There's, I think, at least one or two other restaurants that do that, where either the chef is American, or or they just cater to people. I mean, there is people like Austrians and also like other expats that also, like me, like to enjoy Thanksgiving and think it's a good idea. So yeah, but that's basically it. Yeah, I mean, it's a big city,
That's
so
fun.
you can find. Yeah, as I said, hopefully next year I'll manage. We'll see. I'll probably forget again and be like Thursday morning, be like, oh, what do I do?
If only there was a way to set something to remind you automatically.
Yeah, I know. No, that's no. You know, my brain is like, there's now and there's not now. There's nothing in between. So, well. Yeah, anyway, so that was it. It was fun. Like, I don't know, it's one of those things. I've always liked the idea of Thanksgiving, I have to say. I thought it was, I mean, you know, the history is, yeah, has some
Complicated.
complications, yeah. But I think that the idea of like friends or family getting together and having a really good meal, and I like turkey. I mean, you don't have to do turkey. You can do whatever you want, but like, I like that like meal and being thankful, and kind of also taking a little bit pressure off Christmas, because here it's usually that's what happens on Christmas. So there's a lot of pressure on a single day, and if you can split that a little bit, I think that's also not a bad idea.
I agree. That's good.
Yeah. So, and it's also a natural barrier between Halloween and Christmas. I mean, Christmas start, because Halloween's still not a massive thing. Christmas basically starts in August, the season, like literally, or sometimes like July. Like, it's insane. Like, you go in August to like a supermarket and they have all the Christmas stuff out already.
Yikes. That's
Yeah, so
crazy.
we just November. As soon as the Halloween stuff went away, the Christmas stuff appears then, and then it's all that crap. That all you see is just that kind of crap. And from now on, there's Christmas everything. We're in London like a couple of weeks ago, and is that a Christmas? Yeah, it is. Oh, for crying out loud!
Yeah, here it
Well,
starts. Here it starts.
they're advertising Terry's chocolate oranges. Was the thing we noticed again. Classic Christmas thing.
Here it starts beginning of November, really full on. Like, the first Christmas market opened on the 6th of November this year. So, yeah, as I said, that's why I like, as I said, I really like that Thanksgiving, like, end of November date. And then, like, the day after, hey, like, this is basically end of November. Fine, now we can go into Christmas. So, as I said, I'm a big fan of Thanksgiving. And I've had the fortunate Like I've been fortunate to attend a couple of Thanksgivings in the US as well, so I like that. I'm very thankful to this day for that, to be honest. Like, especially Jerry and his friends taking me on the Joint Air Force Base and Pearl Harbor into the Officers Club. Mm. That was like really a highlight. But also the family like Thanksgiving that we did.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about some tech stories. I don't know who has the first story for today. Tech, yes, I know. This is the big show. I think we're supposed to talk about tech, or we should be. By the way, a little teaser, there will be an announcement at the end of this very show. Actually, two.
Ooh, what could it be?
Now that I think about it, two announcements. Yeah. So I see Ian already.
Yeah,
I something. Mm-hmm. So tell us about Crucial Micron.
Yeah, they're now going out of the consumer space. This is sad.
Mm-hmm.
Crucial Micron was my default choice if I needed to buy memory for anything, yeah. Whether it be SD cards to go in devices, or whether it be memory to stick in a computer, or SD cards, I think that's one on the desk right now here. It was a brand I'd always trust as a consumer. It really, really good quality gear. The lure of AI and all of its, and the AI dollar has taken it away from the consumer market, basically. The AI-driven growth in the data center, surging demand for memory and storage. Micron's made the difficult decision to exit the crucial consumer business in all, to improve supply of our larger strategic customers. Yeah. So the AI dollar is worth more than my $42 for a new SSD every couple of years. And much of the rest of the tech market, to be fair.
But I mean, I have a question here. I mean, you know, back in the day, like 20 years ago even, people were still buying RAM and like doing server stuff and whatever, and building their own computers even quite a lot still. I think the last 10, 15 years, I think that has gone by the wayside. Like the all-in-one computers. Like, I know there's still people like us that do it. It's not that nobody does it, but I think it's definitely less people doing it to this day.
I think there's less. Oh, I don't know though. I think there's two markets where there's still people buying memory and things. One is the holdouts still wait and decide whether they're going to put Windows 11 on the computer or not, and they need to get everything up to date.
Whether they should upgrade from Windows 95, that you meant.
Yeah, exactly. And whether they go out and buy an SSD and some RAM.
Yeah.
Crucial market there, you know. And then there's the other side of it, the gamer market, which has always been one which is massive, and there's plenty of dollars in that market.
But even that one, I think is...
For fast amount, they always have done. Crucial again. I mean, not the biggest player, not the fastest of the players, but one of the more reliable. And then whenever I bought anything from Dell, it was always Crucial Memory. And so it was
I love their stuff.
Crucial Memory. And so in the Dell hardware I bought, it was always that and back in the day. So I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, as I said, I think even the gamer market, I think it's getting less and less. The consoles are getting better and better. The games are not improving that much. It's just an observation. I think the consumer, I mean, they're not getting out of the business of producing SSDs or producing RAM or whatever. They're just not doing
just
it for
selling them.
They're not selling it to you and me.
Exactly, they're selling it to the Dells and whatever companies, the
Super Micros.
Yeah, exactly. I
think you're right. I think, Patrice, if you think about Apple, you can't upgrade RAM on Apple. Mm-hmm. So you buy and you never upgrade it. On PCs, I think, you know, 20 years ago, things moved so fast that, you know, you originally bought your machine with 1 gigabyte of RAM.
Yeah.
And within 2 years, you were having trouble. So you needed to
upgrade
4 gig. Now, even if you buy, for most people, if you buy a machine, even a fairly cheap machine usually has 4, 8, gigabytes
probably
of RAM.
More. Yeah.
And if you, probably more. But even if you buy an 8 gig PC today and you're an average user, 2 years from now, you won't need to upgrade to RAM.
No.
I mean, I was just thinking about when you brought that up. Every computer I've had in the last 20 years, I've done a RAM and a NAND storage upgrade.
Yeah.
Because after a couple of years, you're like, you know, the 256 gig SSD was fine 2 years ago. Yeah. Now I need a terabyte.
Yeah. But I mean, think about it. I think even we are doing it less. Like, we might still do it, but we do it less often, right? I said, I mean, I have a server here next to me that is like a full-on build with like everything. So I like last 2 years actually bought a ton of like hardware like that. And I actually did, I think, buy Crucial RAM because it's pretty good. It's just an observation. I don't know. I have nothing to back it other than just observation of what people are buying simply and what the devices out there do. I mean, it's like...
Yeah. Well, Micron's action tells you what's happening. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're pivoting from B to C to B to B
because
there's a heck of a lot more money there. It just isn't worth it as much as it used to be for them.
Yeah. I mean, the headache of like... consumer support that you have to do and sales and all of that. And I mean,
the
other side,
a nightmare.
Yeah. Right? And on the other hand, you have, let's say 100 or 200 customers, maybe like bigger ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, they need more from you than the average consumer would, like more handholding, more like they expect more from you, but you can focus on that.
Yeah. I wonder if you could somehow calculate the cost of sales per bit of memory. You know, the cost of sales for B2B is much, much lower than B2C.
I assume so, because you're usually also dealing with professionals on either end. So
yeah, hopefully. You got one sales guy closing $1 million deal instead of, you know, 1,000 salespeople trying to sell you a...
As I said,
I think we're in a memory crunch because it's that usual misalignment of supply and demand, and I'm sure you all know that you can't in 1 month increase the supply side of building a memory fab, so it'll take them a couple of years to catch up, or probably less than that, because
this is only happening sometime next year, so they're not immediately stop selling, but they can shift their production over to what they need for the data center needs and for the bigger customers.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking more about the chip part that is, you know, the bottleneck on supply right now is the chips. And it's because the explosion in demand that's being driven by AI. So that's why even just to buy a computer for the next 12 months is going to be expensive. More expensive. Yeah. I don't know.
It already is expensive. Like if you went higher end, it is already expensive.
You know, Micron, Hynix, and Samsung are all busy expanding their fab capacity, but you know, it takes time. It takes a couple of years to build a fab.
Yeah, exactly. We saw that during the pandemic when all of a sudden everybody and their grandmother bought like new hardware, and then everything got really like long lead times and expensive. And
everything.
Yeah, literally
everything. Everything.
You remember headsets with microphones, you know, because every
webcams.
Webcams.
Yeah, we had a problem in our company. I mean, like my area, my team, since we're basically all working remote anyway, didn't have a problem. But I knew entire departments, they were trying to buy headsets and webcams, and they were usually like $20 and they were costing like $120.
Right.
It's literally the same thing. I was like,
right. Yeah,
and like 4 months like delivery times.
Yeah, our company bought like 5,000 webcams and 5,000 headsets.
Yeah,
and you're getting them from wherever they could. Anyway, I agree though. I think it's a sad day that Crucial is no longer going to be around. It's one of the iconic names.
Not so sad for some of the competitors, but because they're like, yay, more business for us. There is some good. I mean, there is some quite good companies. Like, it's not that they were the only one.
But historically, there's always the one you could trust.
Yeah, there's a couple others that I trust.
Again, if you need to send a muggle off to buy something, there's this website called Crucial. Look for that make and buy. There's a nice little thing in there. You can click on the buttons and it tells you exactly what memory goes through your computer and what it is.
Yeah, they were
it's a
really
little bit
good
more
about that
expensive than
stuff.
Amazon. That you can go in there and tell you exactly what you want and how much it will take. Order this. When you've got it, let me know and I'll come around. We'll come around and have a coffee and I'll put it in for you.
Yep.
That was my perfect. It was perfect. I had no for dealing with that kind of thing. It was ideal. You had friends you need memory for their computer. Easy. I'll tell you what to do. And the company that I trust implicitly to sell the right thing always work. You know, that's the
yeah.
Anybody to find an equivalent. Mr. Memory probably will be the one of the ones that's equivalent. I think they still exist. But
yeah. No, I mean, as I said, there is a couple other trusted companies that exist. So it's not a complete loss, but it's also still sad because they were one you could always recommend, as you said. Tom, you're bringing the story that I had on my list, but I have plenty more. So let's talk about that.
Oh.
Let's talk about planes. And let's talk about cosmic rays.
Cosmic rays, man.
That's fun. That sounded very, very California, I have to say.
Yeah, it sounded good. Cosmic rays, man.
My story is the story about Airbus doing software modifications to a bunch of A320 and a couple other different models of planes.
A3X line, basically. There were a couple of A320s,
right.
A321s, a couple of
19s, I think, too.
Yeah.
And they claimed the problem, it was a software update that they had to do to the planes to be a little bit more resilient on basically memory bit errors, I guess is the best way to describe it. And they claim that the problem came about due to solar flares, which is maybe or maybe not the case. But in any case, they believe that the problems that the planes were having were due to some sort of radiation that was flipping bits.
Yeah. I mean, that happens all the time, right? This is not...
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
And, I can remember building... tolerant systems with, what was it called? ECC?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ECC.
Yes.
Memory
checks.
Even today is still...
back to Crucial again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, ECC is still the standard today, like for a lot of things.
Very much.
Error checking and correcting ECCs.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I did a logic design for a unit for that.
Cool.
Lots of XOR gates. So I think it's, you know, they tried to make a claim that there was a particular solar flare event that caused this. And I think some of the scientists are a bit dubious about that because the timing isn't quite right.
Yeah.
But it's always hard to figure out the source of a bit flip like that. It's so hard to figure out.
I mean, I think that whether it was a particular solar flare or not, I think you can question. But I think the general thing that it is solar activity related, I think is probably pretty spot on. Because we are right now at the height of the 11-year cycle that the sun goes through. And aircraft fly pretty high up, so there's less air in between or less atmosphere in between that would protect them. I mean, like an A320, I don't know how high they can go, but like 32,000 feet, 35, 40 even is I've flown up there with them, like even recently. Like I usually fly quite a lot on A320, A321, A321neo. Like that's usually here in Europe, especially like the shorter haul. It's like a lot of A320s.
Yeah.
So
and
that's it. They go up.
The
highest I've seen like probably 42,000 feet. So that's what is that? That's pretty high up there. 42,000.
Right.
I mean over sea level.
You know,
it's about
a long
14
time ago,
kilometers,
actually,
right? So,
when I did do, it's a long way. When I did do chip design, sometimes we do military chips and we had to do what they call rad hard design, radiation hardened design.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically at the very detailed circuit level, you would do a lot of trying to think of a simple way to explain this. Basically, you harden the way every transistor was connected to the power supply, so it was more immune to getting hit by radiations of all kinds.
Yeah, and I mean, they have radiation and then, shielding and so on. Like, there's also extra stuff that gets put in.
And every piece of memory had the ECCs, so that basically every time you were writing or reading memory, it would do an error check on it and fix it if it found a problem. You know, simple sort of XOR kind of logic. And so I'm wondering, if you think about all this, maybe the fundamental problem was the software should have been more tolerant of bit flips in the first place, and good on them for fixing it, but it was probably a design flaw from the beginning.
100%, I would say so. Like, I mean, we don't know if this was introduced like in a later software update. Maybe it was early on could have been, and then they fixed or changed something and it got worse. Like, that can happen.
Right.
So, I mean, those planes are, I think some of them 30 plus years old, so
yeah, it's true. they would have
gone through multiple solar cycles. It's also possible that, I mean, that this problem existed all the time, but it never was it was something that they noticed, right? Because this whole thing came to be because of an accident, or not? Well, yeah. Let's call it an accident. Nothing happened, but it wasn't. It's still considered an accident because it was dangerous. That happened during a flight from, I think, Cancun to New Jersey, Newark, I think, something like that, in late October.
They lost altitude.
Yeah, all of a sudden they lost altitude and nobody could explain why. I said nothing happened. Like, three people suffered like a little, three people had head injuries, probably because they like hit the ceiling or something. 15 people in total, I think. Yeah, it says here we're taken to the hospital at the end, but like nobody died or anything. That's what I mean with nothing happened. Like, it was no major injuries or people dying. Plane didn't crash, exactly. But they of course take that very seriously and investigate it. And a month later, maybe even just as a precaution, they were like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, I think to debug a problem like that is nearly impossible, because it's a random flip of a bit or bits somewhere in your code, and to try to simulate what the usually the methodology here is you inject faults and try to figure out if the fault that you inject had the result that you observed.
I don't know,
nightmare to try to reproduce.
Yeah, I don't know enough about airplane, like especially commercial airplane computer systems, but I would assume that, I mean, I know that the flight recorders and whatever are recording a lot of data.
Oh, that's true. They have a lot of recording.
So it is entirely possible that they had a lot of data already that they collected to see, okay, this is what happened. But it's still, it was probably still an insane thing to figure out and be like, hey, yeah, you know, radiation just changed and then that happened or whatever.
Hit the bit on this line of code and then, the aileron didn't work.
Yeah, something
well,
like that.
Well, I would guess that there's just a set of, the basic set of specs for fault tolerance in all the computer systems. And the trick is to figure out how far you have to go with fault tolerance. You can't go to 100% fault tolerant. That might be unrealistic, but I think it's pretty amazing that they came up with a patch so quickly. So that leads me to believe this wasn't a total surprise. They fixed it. They patched it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume it's not a total surprise because planes are flying up there all the time. There is solar flares and radiation and all of that all the time. So this is a known hazard. Like, this is not something where you're like, oh, surprise, there's solar radiation. Never knew this would happen. No, I mean, of course this is known. So we don't know if that was actually the cause or not. That's probably their strongest suspicion. And as I said, in like anything, airplane, aerospace, they will rather roll out a software update. I think in this case it was even a rollback of some features. I heard from there. I heard some grumbling. I heard some grumbling from some pilots that they lost some features, some safety features, even that they really wanted because they rolled back a version. So it's possible that
maybe that's a more conservative approach, right? Yeah. This happened after an update. Let's roll back to a known good state and start from there.
Yeah, but the fact that I mean, both the EASA, the FAA, and also Airbus, basically all three said, I mean, let's do that and let's do that now.
Right.
Tells you that they took it very seriously. I mean, that had a surprisingly little impact on routes, but it did have an impact. There were some, like a small number of flights from what I've heard, canceled or delayed. Lufthansa somehow managed to do it without any cancellations and any major delays. Mm. So good for them. They basically patched overnight. I think they were lucky because the announcement came basically at the end of their service, so they could literally start right away.
But imagine how sure they had to have been of that patch or rollback to be able to do it so fast. They must have been really sure that it was a safe thing to do.
Yeah, I think such rollbacks are probably not uncommon. Again, airplanes. Like if you install like in a safety critical industry like aerospace, or like airplanes, like you double and triple check everything and everything is redundant and anything could be changed back if it wasn't working or whatever. So I'm pretty sure that the stuff is in place to say, okay, we can go back to this version. Not a problem. We know this is a safe version.
They must have procedures every time they release an update. They have a procedure that if they find problems, this is what we roll back.
By the way, it's also not from what I've seen, not a normal like laptop or something that they just connect to like a USB port on a plane and then just, or no, it's probably not USB because the planes are so old, it's probably COM port or something. No, there's like, I saw on Reddit the boxes that they use for that update, and it's like a massive orange box. It's like, looks like it has a keyboard and a display, and it's like super rugged and sturdy, and has like a big orange cable that connects to the airplane, and that thing is used to patch that. It has a name, I forgot, but
running DOS on an x86,
probably something like that.
8086 machine from 1987,
something like that. It is, I mean, I saw that and I hope it's true. I don't know, but it like based on the comments, I'm in a bunch of air like flying and like airplane Reddits, and yeah, I saw that. I was like, wow, that looks ridiculous, that thing. It's like a massive big cable that probably has less bandwidth than like a modern Thunderbolt cable or something. So it is redundant probably, and like fault tolerant and radiation proof and all of that.
Probably is. So the question is, the next time you board a flight and it's an A321, do you ask the pilot, what update are you
did doing? You yeah, I should probably be like, did you install the update? Yeah. Hey, have you run the check for updates command?
Just check, yeah. Just want to be sure. Did you hear about the new update?
Yeah, no, as I said, that's it took, what did they say? I think, was it 18 minutes on average? Something like that. Airbus had said 2 to 3 hours, but Lufthansa said on average it took them like about 18 minutes to do it.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, good. So I mean, it sounds like a pretty average software update, like, right? So yeah, but as I said, that it is actually a cool story. Like this is how, I mean, a lot of people don't see that. This is how it works all the time. Every incident is investigated, not to find out who's at fault, but to figure out what we could do better, right?
Yep.
If there was some procedure that wasn't followed, that we maybe should reinforce, or was there a procedure that was missing or wrong? Was there some fault in the material? Was there some check that we needed that we didn't know that we needed? Like all of that, like is then considered, and then like a new, like new orders are given out to say, okay, whatever, every 5,000 miles or hours, no, it's usually hours, you have to scan whatever this part for cracks, stuff like that. That's most likely what the outcome of that UPS flight will be. I mean, I at least assume.
What is the saying? Something about safety regulations are written in the blood of the people that
yes
got before. Killed because of it, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. It fortunately not always killed. That's it. Right. There's literally hundreds and thousands of incidents every year. Most of them are without fatalities. They're just minor things like this, where like okay, nothing happened. Some people like sometimes not even people get injured, but like it's still something that gets reported and written up and investigated, and then new recommendations given out, or not. Like if nothing, if everything was fine, it was just a random thing. Like okay, fine, but. That is, as I said, not fortunately, not anymore. People have to die for stuff. Like,
yes,
we've gotten good enough at doing this, I think, that people don't have to die. Still do, but not as much anymore. Yeah, good story. I wanted to bring that one because it was like, this is really cool.
I should have left that one just, for you.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I have another one.
Okay.
I have really another one, and that is, where did I find it now? I wanted to talk about, which one do we pick? Should we talk about fusion reactors on boats? Speaking of safety.
What could possibly go wrong?
So I'll put that story in the chat. So, you know, there's a bunch of companies and startups and governments and like research facilities and whatever, all working on fusion reactors. There's one being built for the last 150 years, I don't know, feels like it, in France.
Yeah.
But it's only a research reactor already. There's one, I think, was it Munich? I don't remember. No, I think that one is nuclear. But there's a bunch. I think there's in the US somewhere, a couple. There's like small research areas, research reactors. There's some startups that are saying, oh, we can make this, like give us money and we'll make this work and whatever. But there is a, there's one CEO of a company called Maritime Fusion, who is preparing to put a fusion reactor on a boat. You know, usually they're on land, they're easy to reach, easy to fix, easy whatever, but he's like, nope.
Fusion doesn't work, so let's put it on a boat.
Sure, boat. I mean, to be fair, if something goes wrong, I would rather it be on the boat somewhere out on the ocean than whatever next to New York City or something.
Right.
Yeah. So he's saying that and thanks to advances in AI and computing in general, superconducting magnets, and there have been some, like I think we talked about that even on this show, he thinks we're closer than ever to having not just fusion being possible, but also being commercially a viable business, right? Because there's a difference between, hey, we can do fusion, which we've done, and we can do it in a way that we actually make money at the end, which we barely did. I think the last breakthrough was like, okay, we have been able to produce more power than we put in by like, whatever, basically nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the ones you see in research papers, it's like we generated a nanowatt more power than we
Exactly. Yeah. So that is very far away within like whatever 10 milliseconds.
This donut I'm reading up on tokamak. It's all interesting.
Yeah. His argument is basically, you know, we have fission right now on ships, right? We have nuclear submarines and other boats like that have fission. And that was for a long, long time. So why not do the same with Fusion? I mean,
it just seems like a weird angle to take on Fusion research, yeah, or development. The whole, yeah, ship thing.
Yeah.
My biggest question about Fusion isn't, can it be done on a ship? That's not my biggest question.
No. <It's>, so what is your biggest question?
Does it work?
I mean,
I understand all the,
we know
all
it
the
works.
Improvements in superconducting, yeah, and all that stuff, but
yeah. I mean, we know it works, right?
Yeah.
There's a pretty big glowing example of like that it works.
It's true. Yeah. Can we artificially create
on a small scale, especially
viable?
Yes. Right. Yeah. I mean, if we can build another sun, then yeah, of course we can do that. But we're not there yet.
So his logic for putting on the ship is, as you say, is, you get rid of the concerns over meltdowns,
yeah,
proliferation or radiation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it said if something goes wrong, it is in the ocean, it's in the middle of nowhere, hopefully. It's like, why did we eventually put nuclear weapons tests in remote areas?
I was gonna say, he could port the ship on the Bikini Islands where the Americans blew up all the,
yeah,
little atolls out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've already begun assembling high temperature superconducting cables and so on. I think they've collected, what did it say, 4.5 million? I don't think that is enough. No. Somehow I have a feeling that's not enough. No, million so far.
Billions,
yeah, I mean, as a seed round, okay, fine.
He's going to need a bigger GoFundMe for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I need a bigger boat.
Yeah, they're definitely looking at the cost for the first startup project in 2032, and it's $1.1 billion. You're right. The company has raised $3 billion to date. So they started with $4.5 million, but they now have raised $3 billion. I mean, good for them. So they can build three of them.
Yeah.
If it works.
If it works.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. Like, I'm not
Absolutely.
Gonna lie, that would be amazing if we could say, hey, we can put this on a ship. Like we don't need. I mean, if this works and produces a lot of energy and I mean, is somewhat viable to be on a ship, I could see it like the big tankers and whatever being driven by that instead of diesel.
Yeah. Well, so yeah. If somebody could make fusion commercially viable.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a bigger technology breakthrough than AI that people are dreaming of?
To me,
it would be world changing if fusion worked.
I don't know.
That's energy where we don't necessarily, where it's cheap renewable energy that has no downsides, isn't it? Allegedly.
I don't know. I think I don't know. It's hard to tell. I would say, it is definitely a big breakthrough because energy is one of the driving factors of cost in the world right now. And it is one of the big problems we have currently with climate change and all of that. But I don't know. I think AI is bigger. I think this will drive a lot of AI changes. I think this will, if this works, this will drive a lot of new technologies that we probably can't even envision right now. Things that we couldn't do before because we were like, yeah, there's no way we can't produce enough energy to do that. And now we're like, hey, sure, here's a little tiny globe thing that produces the energy of an entire city block or whatever.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. At its core, to me, that would be more impactful and impact everything.
No, I think AI is bigger than that because it literally transforms basically all industries, like how industries work and so on. And I think cheap energy will not do that. It might spark new industries, it might change some industries, the energy industry, but I don't think it will fundamentally change how people do work. I don't know. We're all if we could predict the future, then we would probably not be sitting here. So,
what is it? My boss used to always say that old saying: forecasting, especially the future, is very difficult.
Ah, uh-huh. Yes, I've heard that.
when we would be doing our revenue forecast.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's like I always call it like throwing some dice in the air and then whatever, picking random numbers at the end. I mean, like, sure, sounds reasonable. We all know it's never going to happen that way, but sounds good. Yeah, as I said, it's, we'll see. They're not, it's definitely not supposed to send power to the grid, though if this works, they, I mean, for sure, you can do that, right? It is really supposed to be for ships at the end. And for demonstrating it can be done. Like, that's their whole thing. Like, showing we can do this. Yeah, we'll see. I definitely keep an eye on that company. Yeah, there is other companies that have a head start. But yeah, we'll see. You know what we'll also see? What you can also see is our chat. We have a really cool chat system on alive.britishtechnetwork.com where you can like join us every week on Thursday and Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time for this very show. And it's like you've seen this like this pattern everywhere. Like it's the video on the left, the live chat on the right, and you could just like watch us and start typing and talk to us. That's how easy it is. 7 p.m. That's when we start. Whenever that is in your time zone, you will have to figure out. Use your AI for that. Why not? Maybe it's fusion powered in the future. Who knows? And it's really cool. It generates some random names for people, so you don't have to register anything. Makes it easier for you. For example, the Musing Newman was in the chat earlier. We have also some Ian on Linux guy. I don't know. That's a weird name that was generated randomly. if you don't like that name, up top there's a purple button. Tap it. Change name. Change your name to something else. Like it's up to you. If you're listening to this in the recorded form, is it in the registered form? I don't know why. In the recorded form, and like podcast player, our website, wherever you're finding this content, I don't know, your favorite AI ingested it and is showing it to you. Hey, good for you. It's free. You can still get to the transcript of this chat and to the links and stuff that we're posting in there. So we usually post our stories in there. We post our cool things in there. All of that amazing content. And all you have to do is head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Pick today's date in the calendar. That would be the 4th of December, 2025. Wow, I don't even know how it's already December. Where did this year go? But you can do that. By the way, also Tom very nicely always puts a link to that live chat in the show notes for each episode. At least recent episodes have that. So if you're interested, you can also just click that. So thanks, Tom, for that work. And all of that is only possible because of the awesome fusion power generator that Ewan has in his basement. No, actually, because of our technologies. We have a sponsor. It's a friendly company run by a couple of friends of ours in the UK called Our Technologies, awetechnologies.co.uk is their website if you want to go there. And they do some really amazing work with monitoring of environment, like sound levels, vibration, temperatures, like particles in the air, stuff like that. So very, very important for construction sites, but I've also seen them do like concerts and other events, stuff like that. They have a really cool system called Sentry, award-winning system called Sentry, being used at some pretty big rail projects in the UK. As far as I know, not outside of the UK, but I might be wrong about that. But Ewan is definitely very, Ewan and Andy are very open to, like, I don't know, traveling to Austria, for example, coming for a visit and like monitoring sites here. So if that is something that you're working on, it's a really cool system. I love it. Like, Ewan posts sometimes the link to, like, where you can see all the data and whatever, and it's really cool. It's like completely mobile, 5G based. Like, it's really amazing technology, and yeah, they did a good job. So yeah, I've said, if you're interested, reach out to us or reach out to All Technologies directly. And thanks, All Technologies, for sponsoring this network and this very show. And I think with that, is it time for a cool thing?
Do some cool things.
Let's do some cool things. And I think the first one is Tom. Think you're first.
Okay. I think so. My cool thing. Okay. My cool thing this week is a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 50th birthday of the Bite Shop in Silicon Valley. And so there's a celebration, a birthday event in San Jose this coming Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure not many BTN listeners will hear this in time and live in the area and can actually go to the birthday celebration. But I wanted to bring it up because the Bite Shop was the coolest computer shop ever.
Even I've heard of it.
Yeah, it was this one is about the original shop in San Jose, but where I grew up, there was a shop in Mountain View, just down the road, like 2 miles away from my house, in this weird little strip mall, next to a funeral parlor, actually. It was a weird place. But the Bite Shop was like one of the original places where you could, you know, buy computers and all the parts, everything. It was just an amazing place. And I think when they started, they were doing things like selling, you know, the original Altairs and things like that, the MIPS Altair. But I would just recommend that you go to the link that I posted for the event. And there, it's a really simple, basic website, but it has two pictures. One picture is a picture of the shop in San Jose, where you can see the sign, the Bite Shop, and it's got an old Volkswagen Bug, and I think it's a Mercedes next to it. So the picture is like the image etched in my brain of the Bite Shop. So mm-hmm. Happy birthday to the Bite Shop.
Very cool. Yeah, that's... So I've heard of that shop. Like, I don't know why, I don't know where from, but I think, like, over time it just became something like that people even outside of the valley are aware of. So
yeah, and a lot of the companies, you know, what's Nolan Bushnell, Atari, you know, all those people that were building stuff in the early days would haunt the Bite Shop. That was their go-to place. So you probably read it in a lot of books about the origins of many companies.
Very cool. Cool thing. So if you're in the area, go there. You have a watch for us, and an old one, like, based on what I'm seeing.
It's not an old one, it's a new one.
But it's an old, like, people associate it with a certain period of time.
Yeah. and I'm wearing mine today.
And we can barely see it. Now we can see it, yes.
And the reason why this is cool is a new model. The classic G-Shock Square has been around for 50 years or more now in its current incarnations. They've released a new display. It's better. It's called a memory in pixel display. So it's a far nicer LCD than the older models. Much clearer, much brighter.
Mm-hmm.
You can display more on the screen. You know, it's generally the things you can see is better. It is a very nice little watch, and I picked one up. They've gone out of stock almost immediately as soon as they came in. Really, really popular. I was lucky because I was in Romania when the thing dropped. I saw the email and went, I thought, I'll buy one of them now. And I was 2 hours ahead of everybody else, just about sort of, everybody else sort of gets their inbox and like, oh, there's a new thing up, boom. And they went really, really quickly. And it's just a nice, again, they've also updated the plastic and things, so the strap is not as crappy as it used to be. Bluetooth now, so I can connect it to my phone and it keeps it in sync. Just a superb little digital
Oh,
watch.
it's got Bluetooth on
So
it.
wait for the watch show when we finally do
My
one.
God. My God. Yeah, when you finally do it, yes. you know what that reminded me
Ewan,
of?
listen to me, finally do it. Graham, we all want to do it.
Good. I'm waiting for it. You know what that reminded me of? Back in the, I want to say somewhere in the 90s, early 2000s, the G-Shocks had some transmission capability. They could connect to computers and somehow transmit. I don't
Yes.
know how that worked or what it was, but it was crazy.
They could do all, there was various things
Some
so
sort
they
of
could.
RF signal, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember, but it was really crazy, like,
Oh, you
but
could
you
do
couldn't
that.
do
There was
anything
one
with
you
it.
could.
Bluetooth
You could.
1.0.
It
Same
was not
thing.
Bluetooth back then. It was definitely pre-Bluetooth.
0.5.
It was pre-Bluetooth.
You could change TV channels with one, because lots of kids used to
Oh.
have the remote control ones and play around on
Yeah.
TV and.
Yeah. Something like
So
that.
it was some
Yeah.
RF signal, yeah.
Yeah, some RF signal thing, but I was like, that was crazy.
That's a cool watch.
Very cool. Yeah,
Very cool. Super cool.
if you're into that kind of watch, like, but they've become more and more popular again. I think, like, retro. It's
Definitely.
very retro these days.
I've seen a few of them
Yeah,
around,
people remember, like,
yeah.
they whatever. They had a smartwatch for a couple of years, and like some people are like, I really don't need one,
It was a
and
bit
but I kind
sucky.
of like wearing a watch again. So hey.
So they're wearing G-Shocks, listening to vinyl, and talking on a flip phone.
Yes,
yep.
Pretty
People
much.
disconnecting
Yeah,
from
there's
going minimal tech,
cafes
retro minimal
here
tech.
where it's like a disconnect cafe, or like literally like no nothing, no phones, no laptops, no nothing. Like,
Imagine, how
so
can you
boring.
live without
Exactly, so boring. I don't know what I would do
that?
without my podcast or my audiobooks. My cool thing, I changed my mind last second. It's something I literally just discovered today, but because there's a Cyber Week sale on it, if you're into that, you should go there. It's a it, you know there's DNA there's tons of DNA tests out there. The 23andMe, I think, is the big one. And as someone who worked on integrating the like professional grade, like medical grade DNA tests and testing companies into products of ours, I have a pretty negative view on most of them, because they usually they've been
Sell your
like,
data.
well, that's the other part. They sell your
Well, was that the
data.
problem, wasn't it?
They but also the results are like, some people are like, oh, this was amazing, whatever. But for the most part, what I've seen is, and I think it's to some degree due to the fact of that it's for consumers. So they try to do things that people understand or that people care about, or whatever, and not go deeper. But
Right.
like a lot of the advice, especially health advice that you get, like the DNA results themselves might be correct for the few things that they even tested, but then the advice that they give is pretty generic and like broad, and like, they don't want to get sued, they don't want to give medical advice, all of that. So I usually stay away from them. I've never done a DNA test on 23andMe or any of that, because, yeah, I know how useless they are. But I found one recommended actually by a doctor, on the internet, but like by a doctor that I follow, that is kind of a, it's pretty like vocal and pretty big in that space of like DNA testing or whatever. He recommended that one. Sequencing.com. It's like, I've checked them out. I mean, they're fully HIPAA compliant. They are medical grade, so they're HIPAA compliant. They will never sell your data. They don't like they even if you don't want to, they don't store your data. All of that, like, it's your decision what you do with it. But what is important and what they offer is, one, right now they're ridiculously much cheaper than they usually would be. But what they really offer is the deeper, more professional health checks. They scan, they analyze the entire DNA, not just like a couple little samples. What they offer you, not for free, but like you can pay for it, is a continuous monitoring. So because the research in this area is right now especially ever evolving, we're learning every I don't know, every year, every couple of months, something new about DNA, and it's more, it gets more and more complicated. Like when we thought back in the day, oh, like if this thing, if whatever, this one gene is that way, then this happens, and now we're realizing, no, it's like these 15 things have to go together for this to even happen. So they offer, and that's what professional medical services often do, for a fee, of course, a continuous update and a continuous monitoring.
Yeah, that's genius. I'd never thought about the fact that the science is advancing so much. You can charge people whatever, $100 a year to update the report.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And they will inform. That's usually what happens with if you go through your doctor. You can go, like in the US, I can tell you that you can go to your doctor, and they can order that. Like if, for a price, of course, like nothing's not free, but they can order it, and then they will get the results.
I'm sure it'll be very free.
No, not really. but like it's as I said, they can order that, and as I said, the value really is not the one time snapshot, but also the ongoing
continuous
thing. Yeah. Whether you care about that or not, whether you're okay with the risk that such a DNA testing also incurs, because it's you're sending your DNA somewhere and they might store it or not, that you have to decide on, but so, I like this one.
So they're having this huge sale, and I'm guessing what they've learned is you know, the best money is the recurring payment.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So if you lower the price of the initial test, you entice people, and then you can start bugging them about buying a subscription. But even the comprehensive one is only about $600-$700.
Yeah. I mean, they're saying it's a value of $3,500 or $3,300 or something. In reality, it's probably more like
$2,000.
They
just made that
up. That's fine. that's fine. No, but as I said, like if that's something that you're interested in, sequencing.com is the one that has been recommended. I always go for, I mean, the other option is go through your primary care physician and go through there, because a lot of the information, unless you know how to interpret it, what to do with it, is not super useful.
But if you go to your doctor, they're going to use a service like this, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the cool thing here is you get at the end, you get the file, you get the information, and that is usually a pretty standardized format. So you could take that to someone else later on if you wanted to.
I see.
So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's good to get a recommendation of a sort of upfront.
Yeah, exactly. I was pretty
a sketchy
down.
Place.
Yeah, I was pretty down on most of all of them. And this is the first one, other than the one that I worked with in the US, and the blanking on the name right now. I was pretty down on most of them. Yeah, we'll see. I ordered one, and cool. I'll let you know when I got.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, but I know someone who like has here in Austria who already did it. So, yeah, that's my cool thing. I think with that we have a good show. We have two announcements. One you kind of heard at the beginning. After I think 5 years or something, we finally decided that Jeff is no longer the interim host. So it's official. He's official now.
He passed the test.
No, he just
internship is over.
No, he just did a Steve. he just did a Steve Jobs and dropped the I. it's still Ewan's network. Nothing has changed really. It's just we said okay after
change.
it kind of was like in the beginning it was that way and then it became a running gag. But I think at some point it just had run its course and we decided okay. Maybe it's time to drop that. So we're dropping that. And Jeff is not here today, but so I'm an interim host. Just wanted to mention that. The more important one is, you know, Christmas is coming, which also means we have the last show of the year, which is usually our Christmas quiz. So that will be fun. I hope we will have a big crowd. We will have a lot of questions about what happened this year? What was announced? What happened in the news? So I would recommend that you start polishing, like go back like through the news of the year, go back to the transcript for the show, all of that. Go to like the big websites like Google and so on. What did they release in products, stuff like that. Like get ready because the Christmas quiz is always about stuff that happened this year, the funny stuff, the interesting stuff. And I mean, the winner is, we'll just get some brownie points, but it's just a lot of fun. I just enjoy doing that, and I'll be
in respect of the BTN community.
It's more fun doing it when you don't know.
Yes, I mean usually that's what how it's like. It's like what this happened today. This happened what? This year? What? Really? I remember that. No, like, yeah, you actually brought the story in whatever,
right,
March.
That's the best
part.
That
will be the case.
That's the best part.
Oh, yeah, that's usually, I mean, even for us, it's hard. So, December 8th, no, 17th? 17th, the Thursday, I think. Is it the 18th? See, now I'm doubting myself. What is the Thursday? Is it the 18th or the 19th?
18th.
The 18th. 18th. Okay, so I was right at the beginning and I doubted myself. The 18th
Never
of December.
Go with your gut, Patrice.
Yeah, that's usually wrong. I don't know what to say. It's usually wrong. 18th of December, 2025. Christmas quiz, big show, will be the second to last show this year. Of course, we will have the Mac show as well, and that will be on the 19th. So we have two back-to-back Christmas quiz shows, and then we're closing shop for the rest of the year until we return at the beginning of next year with the yearly predictions for this year. So we'll have a look at what we thought would happen this year. And then, of course,
and we'll be hopelessly wrong as usual.
As usual, yeah. I mean, actually, we did somewhere in the middle of the year. I think we glanced at it real quick to see like how it was going, and it wasn't so bad. There were some correct predictions, but also a lot of them were not. I think Tom, I remember you talking about the Intel CEO, for example, or was it Sonos? I don't remember, but something like that. So we'll see how the year ends. I mean, there's still a couple of weeks, like 3 weeks ish.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit more than 3 weeks in this year. So
not over
stuff
till it's over. So.
Exactly. So up as that first show next year will be our look back at 2025 and our predictions for 2026.
That'll be fun.
So with that, let's figure out where people can find out about you, and let's go east to west this time around. So let's start with Ian. Thanks for being here.
You can find me. Thank you very much for having me, as always. I can be found here on Thursday talking crap about technology. Otherwise, I find me on LinkedIn. My name is Ian Grant.
Very cool.
That's
very
the
cool.
Easiest place working for Bing. That's my usual stuff.
Beam.
But yeah.
Oh yeah, you have to put back your logo again.
Oh yeah, but you're
wearing at least a hoodie, so or a sweater.
Like that. Where am I branded go?
Yay. Tom, like the man who's about to go on a road trip, from what I've heard. Where can people?
No, I'm just sending the wife.
Just sending the wife. Well, that's also good. Yes. You have the house to yourself. So what are you going to...
Big parties.
There will
be
a party
in my house. Everybody's invited.
Okay. We'll be there. Scotty?
Bring your cosmic rays.
I'll bring my cosmic rays. Anyway, Tom, where can people find out more about you?
People can find me on Mastodon. I am tomf@sfba.social. Thanks.
Very cool. And thanks for being with us, and also for always posting the shows and doing an awesome job at it. You can find out more about me on this very network every Thursday on the Big Show and tomorrow and every Friday on the Mac Show. So tomorrow I think Jeff will be back, as far as I know at least. So I think he took care of his family business there on the hospital. I hope not at least, but we'll see. Everything I'm doing on my website, thepatrice.com, and Jeff and I have a podcast called Retro Rewatch, where we rewatch retro TV shows and then talk about it. We're closing in on the end of Stargate SG-1 Season 3. We're right now watching Stargate SG-1, but we're sprinkling in other shows. And the next one will be a little bit... different, I would say, because we're gonna get to know a certain person named Ergo. So head over to retrorewatch.com to find out more about that. And I always like to show my mug. You can also, by the way, reach out to us, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com, I think is the britishtech@gmail.com. I always forget. I think it's britishtech@gmail.com. is our email address, and I hope I didn't get that wrong. I should know that after, I don't know, doing this for 14 or 15 years, but you would think so. Or 10 years, not that long. You can also reach out to us on Mastodon. It's at britishtechnetwork@techhangout.social. Or you can do that on Blue Sky at britishtechnetwork.com. It's our website. See, I got confused now. I hope I got them all right. I hope I got them all right. But yeah. So that's it for this show. And yeah, I would say thanks everybody for... It's actually, by the way, at britishtech@techhangout.social. See, I knew I got it wrong. So thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for being here. Thanks for being in the chat. Thanks for an awesome year as well. It's been a bit crazy, not gonna lie. This year, I'm so happy it's over. But we still have a couple shows. And so join us back tomorrow on the Mac show and then next week on the big show. And then we're basically reaching our Christmas quiz the week after. So until then, see you then. Bye-bye.